My message this morning is entitled The Importance of Spiritual Community. So last Sunday, I concluded my talk by saying that I wanted to see us continue to authentically grow our spiritual community. Now, after some thought, I realized that I was assuming that we all want to be a part of a spiritual community. After all, we are actually gathered here doing spiritual community together right now. I do think, however, that it would do us all a bit of good if we considered the importance of spiritual community. After all, when Jesus was ready to start his ministry, what was the very first thing he did? He went down to the lakeshore and he said, "Follow me." He created community, the very first thing for him. Author, educator, and activist Peter Parker. I watch way too many cartoons. Paul Parker, you may be familiar with the author Palmer Parker. He says, greatness. No, that's what Peter Parker's uncle said. Parker Palmer says that we are called to community, to be mutually supportive, empowering, and accountable to life together. He says that we know that from the Bible, from what we know of Christian tradition, and we know it from the yearnings of our very own hearts. He goes on to say that today, the heart's call to community is amplified by a practical need for community in our lives. And in times of dwindling resources, we need to share. In times of dangerous social tensions, we need to cooperate and to celebrate. In this time of, well, political madness, he says, we need to support each other's sanity. Now, as you might expect, spiritual community is important in other spiritual movements as well. In Buddhism, it's called Sangha. A Sangha is a community of friends practicing the Dharma together in order to bring about and to maintain awareness. The essence of Sangha is awareness, understanding, acceptance, harmony, and love. Now, according to Thich Nhat Hanh, Sangha is more than community. It's a deep spiritual practice. He actually goes on to say, the presence of a Sangha, you can think of it as spiritual community when I say Sangha, the presence of a Sangha is a wonderful opportunity to allow the collective energy of Sangha to penetrate into our bodies and into our consciousness. He says that we profit a lot from that kind of collective energy. Although, you know, we can rely on the energy of mindfulness that's generated by our own personal practice, sometimes that's simply not enough. But if you know how to use that energy of mindfulness in order to receive the collective energy of Sangha, you will have a powerful source of energy for your transforming and for your spiritual healing. This is sort of beautiful, I think. This is how he understands Sangha. He says, your body, your consciousness, and your environment, it's like a garden. There may be a few trees and bushes that are dying, and you may feel overwhelmed by anguish and suffering at the sight of that. You may even be unaware that there are still many trees in your garden that are solid, vigorous, and beautiful. When members of your Sangha, your spiritual community, come into your garden, they can help you see that you still have a lot of beautiful trees and that you can enjoy the things that have not gone wrong with your landscape. That's the role that Sangha can play. Many people in the Sangha are capable of enjoying beautiful sunset or a cup of tea. They dwell firmly in the present moment, not allowing worries and regrets to spoil the present moment. He says, sitting close to these people, walking close to these people, you can profit from their energy and restore your own balance. When their energy of mindfulness is combined with yours, you will be able to touch beauty and happiness. Now, in yoga, the concept of community is called satsanga. The root is sat, which means truth, and sangha, which means coming together. So the term itself sort of means truth seekers coming together. It's about gathering together with like-minded people. Now, yoga master Swami Kripa once said that the single best thing you can do for spiritual growth is to surround yourself with like-minded people. Now, it seems to me that if that's that big of a deal, it's pretty remarkable considering all the other things that we could do to grow our spiritual lives. But he says surrounding yourself in community with like-minded people is the most important. But honestly, it makes some sense. For one, we humans have a somewhat difficult time seeing ourselves honestly, both our attributes and our faults. So it often takes another person, or better yet, a group of people to help us do that. So Swami Kripa has also said that the key to our hearts lies in the heart of another. Part of the truth of this is that we really can't see ourselves. Our inward experience is very different from the outside. We don't see our gifts and our failings so clearly all the time. It really requires the help of others to see it. And it takes another person, or going even larger than that, a community, to call us out when we're a little bit off base. Now, the other part of this sort of satsanga effect is that the people we surround ourselves often have a strong influence on us, psychologically, emotionally. You probably have felt that reality when you spend time with energetic or loving people. They bring those same kind of qualities to you, and you want to express them. But also, the opposite's true. It's way too easy to pick up negativity from other people. And when we spend time with people who are a little more knowledgeable than us in whatever arena, be it business or romantic life or spiritual growth, we tend to start to initialize and internalize those things in our lives. Spirituality is at the heart of community life. Spirituality has to do with faith, relationships, reflections, the moral fiber of our lives, as well as awe and wonder. Spirituality opens the door to a bigger world, a cosmic world, and the growing consciousness that we are interconnected with the universe beyond our immediate experience. When we choose to commit to this kind of intentional spiritual community, there are many sort of implicit promises that we make when we join. And as seekers of deeper relationships and working for a more just and peaceful world, some of the most important promises that we make as we join a spiritual community are this: that we'll work for the common good, that we appreciate the giftedness of each person, that we participate in meals and things that nourish each other, and that we begin to be open to sharing what we have. You know, there are times on this journey where the road is unclear and where the road has many, many twists and turns. The spiritual journey is often a wilderness zone. So we need each other to journey together. Now, research also points to some of the qualities of an effective community. So the core qualities which need to be present in a healthy spiritual community are kindness, generosity, cooperation, forgiveness, and mercy. Now, let's just very briefly think about each one of those qualities. Kindness. Well, kindness involves love and care and respect. And it's also actively aware of the vulnerability of other people. Kindness is aware of the vulnerability of other people. Then generosity takes kindness to the next level. Generosity is sort of the opposite of tit for tat. And it arises out of abundance rather than out of scarcity. A key item for developing generosity is, of course, outreach. Which brings us to cooperation. Cooperation is the opposite of competition. Competition can kill a community, particularly a spiritual one. It is the commitment to work something out in a mutually satisfying way. Frankly, this is a place that many people in the church fall short as they place their personal agendas over and against the greater good of the community. Which brings us to forgiveness. Forgiveness recognizes our woundedness. Often for hospitality to happen, forgiveness is the door opener, especially when we are talking about hospitality for those internal members of the community. See, because of the grudges that we can sometimes hold, it's sometimes easier to welcome a stranger than it is a community member that we know. Which, of course, brings us to forgiveness. Forgiveness is often related to accepting fallibility, a willingness to accept the human condition. Making mistakes, not being perfect, being responsible for unintentional consequences are part of our human fallibility. Our fallibility is one of the things in community that everyone shares. It is a part of who we are. And because of that, and closely related to forgiveness, healthy spiritual communities need to actively practice mercy. Empathy and compassion are the starting points for mercy. By walking in the shoes of another, we are moved to a deeper understanding which will help us direct our energy towards being more compassionate and more merciful. In living in a community that puts all of these elements into practice, the community itself becomes sort of a microcosm, a living example of what the world could and should be. It demonstrates how the world might function if it were committed to communal living, kindness, generosity, cooperation, forgiveness, mercy. In a community like that, peace and justice are not merely actions of the community, but ways of being community. Such community life is built on the strengths and on the gifts of the collective members, not on the problems or fears of any specific individual. And that's why spiritual community matters. It's why this spiritual community matters. And I thank each and every one of you for the gifts that you bring to it. These gifts from each of us, help this community be what it is. And what this spiritual community is, well, it's a unique and accepting space that is very much needed in the craziness of today's world. So I thank you. And I'll conclude with these words from Romans. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another showing honor. Do not lag in zeal. Be ardent in spirit. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in suffering. Persevere in prayer. Continue to contribute to the needs of the saints and extend hospitality to strangers. I'd like to offer you the opportunity to share any thoughts you have about spiritual community with your spiritual community. Are there those who have thoughts they'd like to share? We have somebody here.
Yeah. I agree. And I think it goes back to part of our humanity. It's that it takes something that's kind of earth shaking to make us realize we're not okay by ourselves. It's typically tragedy where we kind of realize that we're a little lost and a little confused and a little scared, and we naturally seek other people out. Wish that we could figure out how to recognize that life's like that all the time. It just doesn't necessarily seem like it until there's a big thing pointing it out. So I'm completely in agreement with you. Are there others?
It doesn't always have to be a tragedy. It can be an outside threat.
Sure.
Years and years and years ago when I was trying to start a community association, you know, and trying to get people interested just so we'd know who our neighbors were.
Mm-hmm.
And someone said, after a while, all you have to do is to say that there is a trailer park going to be developed here close by, and you'll have people join immediately.
Right.
And that is sad. It takes a threat from the outside to make you all bind
and
together.
And unfortunately, people know that and use it to manipulate groups. Yeah.
Responding a little bit to what Roxanne said a minute ago, it was so inspiring to me. I wanted to respond to the Pittsburgh thing, and did go to the temple for that service, and the covenant was well represented at that service.
Very much so.
And but the moment, the biggest moment in it to me was that when they said, "Would all you who are Jewish stand up?" And about half the congregation stood up. And then when he said, the rabbi said, "Would all of you who are non-Jewish stand up?" And we did. And it was just such a moment of pulling together, mm-hmm. and such a beautiful expression of the community of this city.
Yeah.
It was great. But I, when you were reading the scripture this morning, I was thinking, as those gifts were mentioned, it brought back to mind a statement that came to me from a East African Methodist bishop back when I was in the Methodist Church, and who said, you know, we concentrate a lot on quality and quantity here in the Church of the Covenant. And today we were talking about quality of our experience here rather than the quantity. But the statement that came, was given to me, was the bishop said, regarding the shepherd and the congregation, that it's the job of the minister to be the shepherd of the congregation, but it's sheep that beget sheep.
This is true. Are there others?